You can probably tell from my duct tape covered Bible that lately I've been feeling nostalgic. But it's not quite nostalgic, it's something else. This story from the Gospel of Mark that rounds out Mark's long introduction to the ministering community, it's left me homesick for a home that really never existed. The Welsh people call that Hiraeth. It's a longing for something inevitably lost. But the way some describe it, Hiraeth is like missing something that you never had. Let's define two words before we read this short story out of Mark 6. The first word is amazed. When Mark uses the word amazed, it means can't understand. And then the other word is offended. And when Mark uses the word offended, most of the time it means I'm not going to listen to you anymore. And so with these things in mind, hear now the word of the Lord from Mark 6, 1 through 6. Jesus left there and went to his hometown, accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. Where did this man get these things? They asked. What's this wisdom that has been given him? What are these remarkable miracles he is performing? Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters here with us? And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his own town, among his relatives, and in his own home. Jesus could not do any miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. Jesus was amazed at their lack of faith. Did you notice that the passage begins and ends with amazed, which means can't understand? The amazing thing about this reading, though, is that Jesus is amazed. Can't understand why his hometown loved ones have no faith. He finds their lack of faith disturbing. So there's Jesus in the place of worship, teaching on the Sabbath, and the people can't understand him. They don't know where Jesus got these things, and they wonder where his wisdom came from, and what's with the miracles? How is he pulling off this stuff? How does a carpenter leave and then show back up one day, and now suddenly he's a wise miracle worker? After all, he's just Mary's son and the brother of all these brothers and sisters. But then Mark fills in another part of the story. Not only are they amazed, but you get halfway through the story and they are offended. They're offended. In fact, the word here in the Greek New Testament is where we get the word scandal. Oh, they see Jesus as scandalous. I heard a wise teacher tell us one time, just because you're offended doesn't make you right. It just makes you offended. And that has really gotten me through a lot of adulthood, because ministering to people is just messy. You know, is it okay to say that? Because being together for years and years and years, sometimes it's just messy. And I wonder if that's what's going on with Jesus' hometown crowd. He goes in and he starts talking. And you know what they see when Jesus walks up? I don't know if synagogues had this at the time, but walks up to the pulpit, unrolls the scroll, and starts talking. You know what they saw? They saw a little boy who played kickball out in the streets with his brothers and sisters. And that's all they saw. And they get offended because they see him as a threat to their own idealism, the ways they romanticized the past back when Jesus was just a boy and back when Jesus just worked as a carpenter. Why did he give up carpentry to become a wise miracle worker? He should have just stayed a carpenter. I watched an episode of Frasier years ago when he volunteered for Habitat for Humanity. And let's just say Frasier was not the most mechanically inclined person. They made him, I'll never forget this, they made him that day at Habitat for Humanity the plumber's helper's helper. He was basically just there to get stuff for the plumber's helper. And I think that's probably the way that these people saw Jesus when he got up. Maybe he was a carpenter. If Joseph was a carpenter, that would have made Jesus the carpenter's assistant. And so isn't it interesting that in Mark, that this passage forms a transition in Mark's story about people beginning a ministering community. But here we are in the transition in Mark 6 as our own group of people do the work of Jesus. And that's where we come into this picture, dear friends. Saying we want to minister is not the same as ministering. And when you try to minister to people, some people like it, and for some reason, some people don't. And when we try to minister, we find ourselves ministering to people, to one another, and people gets messy sometimes. Can I get a witness? Amen. But here's the twist in the story, and again, this is where we come in. We may be the prophet who has no honor right here in our hometown. I was never a carpenter. I was never even a carpenter's assistant. And I barely would have even been the plumber's helper's helper. But when I was 17 years old, before the duct tape Bible came into my life, I felt a distinct, palpable, measurable, without a doubt, calling to spend my life as a preacher. And I'll never forget that feeling. But during my senior year in high school, and I've told this story before, so if you've heard it before, you're about to hear it again. During that senior year of high school, one of my very best friends from youth group, from the time that I had started going to church around 12, 13, all the way till I graduated from high school, one of my best friends in youth group, she was a year older than me. She went off to college. And while she was off at college, that's when it was like, yep, I'm going to be a preacher. And she came back from college, and she came back pregnant. And I remember that as a wannabe preacher, because I had seen it modeled for me, that it was my job to tell her how she had messed up her entire life and that she had done wrong. So I stand here before you today telling you without a doubt that I have very few regrets in my life. I think that they, a lot of times, are a waste of time. But that moment is a regret that I carry with me every single day, and I think about it all the time. I wish so badly that I could go back in time and do it over and learn. The problem is that learning those kinds of lessons often take time. But as we get older and as we learn these things, one of the things that occurs to me after 30 years of messy congregational ministry is that every single one of us comes in here with a story. I don't care what your background is, where you've been, where you're going, where you are today. Every single one of us has a story. Every single one of us comes to this table in the same shape. And every single one of us, every single one of us has Jesus meeting us at this table saying, come to the table. The twist in the story in Mark 6, and again, I think this is where we come in, is that all the hometown people are offended. Jesus quotes something about a prophet being honored everywhere except home, but then Mark makes a comment, and I think it's a little ironic. I think it's because I grew up poor with a single mother and a revolving door of stepdads that I've always longed for home, but I've always loved underdog stories. I love underdog stories. And if Mark 6 is anything, it's an underdog story where the underdog, you ready for this? This is going to just blow your hair back. The underdog story of Mark 6, the underdog in Mark 6 is God. It's Jesus, who we know from Mark 1:1 is the Messiah. And the underdog of Jesus in Mark 6 is constantly rejected and shunned for the first 5 chapters of Mark, despite the fact that the masses are chasing him down everywhere he goes. And the religious people see him as a threat because he's ministering to the wrong people and he's ministering in the wrong way. You ever been the wrong person, by the way? You ever felt in any time in your life, you ever been the wrong person? I'm here to tell you, Jesus sees that, and Jesus sees you, and here we are. Jesus goes out of his way, literally at times, to meet people in need. Some of them are rejects of society, 3 of whom we've met over the past couple of weeks. You remember the demoniac on the wrong side of the lake? A bleeding woman and a sick girl. Go to any corporate boardroom and you will be unlikely to find wrong side of the tracks man or bleeding woman or dead girl. These are the people that society looks at and says, no. But Jesus meets them, heals them, and they take up an entire chapter in Mark's short 16-chapter Jesus biography. But here's the thing. Jesus also goes out of his way to minister to the establishment. Because the sick little girl who becomes the dead little girl from last week, the dad was the synagogue leader. Jesus does not care whether you are the synagogue leader or the dead girl. He meets us where we are. But then here in the next chapter in Jesus' hometown, they get offended at wise healing Jesus. I don't know, maybe it was too much wisdom. Too much mighty work of healing. Something does not make sense. Something is not adding up in this passage. What is really going on that Mark wants us to hear in this story? I think it comes together in Mark's underdog climax, ironic, sarcastic comment in Mark 6, 5. And he could do no miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The people are dumbfounded and offended, drowning in their own hirith. They see hometown carpenter boy saying wise things and healing sick people, and they are dumbfounded and offended. And then Mark just puts a little comment in there for us. And Jesus could do no miracles there except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. No miracles except heal people, which are miracles. No miracles except heal people, which are miracles. And if we can see that, then we can leave nostalgia behind in exchange for the work of the ministering community today. What are we called to today, right now, today? We are called to do miracles among people who no longer believe in miracles. We are called to do miracles among people who are either this close to giving up on Christianity, Jesus, church, God, whatever, or to people who have given up. We, as the forming ministering community, are called to take to those people, not church, not book, but Jesus. This is what we are called to do as the ministering community, is to take Jesus to people. We are called to heal people who need healing. And get this, what better place to start than to practice on ourselves? Us. We need healing in a very sick world. We are our greatest allies in this world. We gathered in this room right now, and to our friends and loved ones who aren't able to be with us, we are our greatest allies. The true test of any ministering community of Jesus followers is the way we show grace to each other as hometown loved ones who've been together for a long time, and then to heal new people who show up on our doorsteps longing for a home that many of them never had.